Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing, and then some. Episode 300, and you guys know what that means. So there's a bunch of you that could probably skip this one and still know everything in it, but I think Jared did a really cool job of hosting the episode, so yeah, listen to it. It'll be over before you know it, or fast forward through my parts. So thanks everybody for, I don't know, was it 5.5 years, 300 episodes, and you must want to be on. I need people that want to be on the show. That's kind of the, I think I've said this before, that's the hard part, is getting you adventure racers to talk. So if you like to be on, I bet you got a story, or if you know anybody that wants to be on, yeah, hit me up, we'll get you on. Hey, with the proliferation of adventure race podcasts, it's even harder to get guests, so I'm counting on you to make this great. I ain't gonna say that. Anyway, enjoy this episode, and next week ish we'll be back to interesting guests. This week we have an interesting host, a so-so guest. Next week we'll have so-so host and interesting guests. So yeah, fast is slow. Slow is fast. I never get that right. Slow is fast. Fast is good. Take a few chances. Be safe. And thank you all very, very much for listening for the last 300 episodes. So, thanks. Enjoy the show.
There. I don't know why I keep forgetting to turn on my audio.
Well, it has finally come.
Well, it's been long enough, hasn't it?
Yeah. So I'm running this show?
You're running the show.
Oh, boy. First, I'd like to start with, if you're expecting a well-oiled host that has had over 300 episodes of adventure racing podcasting experience, well, you're in for a ride.
Well, hey, they expect that every week, so that's nothing new.
So I gotta say, what you've created here with the podcast and the photos and everything is amazing, but I have personally one tiny gripe. There's a photo that you took of me at the C2C race post race. Yeah. And we just like sat down beside the finish line, and I started looking through photos that you'd already posted, and you got me one, and I'm looking down right at my phone. Everybody else is up looking around me. Like literally the second later, I would have been looking up, but that's a favorite photo of mine, of yours.
You know, I've been accused of being sneaky, but I don't really think I am. I'm just there. So,
yeah.
So, oh, is that the one in the chairs?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's it in my top 100 pictures. How's that sound? Of my personal favorites. So,
yeah. So how did you get into this race photography stuff?
Because I was too lazy to race anymore. So in 2009, Primal Quest Badlands was here. Paulette was on a team, and I had these little crappy $80 video cameras and was making videos for the team. And one thing led to another. She went to a different team to race. Don Mann said, "We don't have anybody to film this. You want to do it?" And since it's literally in my backyard, like, when I mean literally, there was a checkpoint 400 meters from the house. So that's how it started. Back in those days, I shot for 10, 12 days, you know, of the race, and then spent 6, maybe 8 months, not only editing, but learning to edit. So, you know, you come out with a 2-hour DVD, really, which you don't do anymore. And then 5 or 6 years later, and I don't know exactly when it happened, I realized that I would come home with 40 hours of a video, you know, just way, 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 way more you could do. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just start taking pictures. So, you know, it transitioned into doing the photos. And I suppose now it's probably pretty close, 50-50, maybe a little bit heavy on the photo side, because it seems to me that, well, it doesn't seem, photos get more views than videos do, for whatever. And then I started doing, you know, the stupid little live updates and stuff at races, and people seem to like that. So, yeah. So I guess I would say now I concentrate. Photos are first, live video is second, and video is third. But I still like to do video. It's just like nobody watches it.
Yeah. Yep. That's cool.
Yeah. So, not to take over the podcast, but you should introduce yourself.
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Jared Hart. I have been racing now for probably about 8 years, I believe. Yeah, college student now. And
yeah,
should I explain why I'm here?
Yeah, yeah.
So I did the what was that race called? Rootstock Quarantine AR.
And it was a virtual,
it was the virtual adventure race that they hosted, and I won an interview on this show. Well, one thing led to another. And
and you had some really good suggestions for doing interviews and being on and stuff, and you know, Cause you actually, and I think you had a good idea of being on with some of your quote unquote heroes in the sport. And I could never make it work. So one thing led to another. And so if people that have listened to this forever know that 100, 200, now 300 episodes, I get to be the star. So you're in good company. Let's see. Who did the first one? Was it Chris? No, who did the 100? All right, I'm going to look here. So Anne-Marie Dunhill did 200, episode 200. And let's see how long this takes to find. Not there. Okay, just do it this way. So that's how this all came about. So, all right, I'm done explaining.
So you've been to a lot of races, and you definitely get yourself around the country to all of the best places. But is there a favorite race that you've gone to, or is there one that you'd like to go, either just volunteer, do photography, whatever it is that you'd want to do there? But
the favorite race question. I always say that's like for people with kids, what's your favorite kid? I am going to say, and this changes all the time, and sorry about that. I'm going to say Untamed New England. Sorry, Mark Harris. Sorry, Jeff Leininger. But and I can't pick one of I'm not going to pick one of those years, but a big deal that to put that over the top is that those were some of the earliest races I did. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's where Legendary came from yeah. doing those with, you know, at those races. And so and they were always fun. And Grant did such a great job with them that I'm going to have to pick those. But see, I could also make the same argument for Cowboy Tough, because Mark really, he brought me into the Cowboy Tough family. And, you know, that was 5 years of really super good races. Those were easy because they're 3 hours from home. And then I could say the same thing about AR Georgia, because Jeff is like, you know, come to every race. Let me have a race, come to it. So, yeah. So I didn't even answer your question, but I gave you a long answer.
And as a
I don't know that I have a bucket list race, because, you know, I got to go to God Zone. I've done a couple Primal Quests. Eco didn't. I don't say it wasn't interesting to me, but I knew the way it was going to be, and that was not something that would that my skill set, quote unquote, was useful for. So maybe the only other is, you know, obviously Patagonia, just because it's Patagonia. But I also know that that's not a good, it's also not a good race for my skill set, because I think what I do well is keeping people up to date. You know, in the middle of Patagonia, you got no signal. So, that's right. Yeah, right now, you know, South African races would always also be cool, and some more stuff in Europe. Yeah, I was supposed to, well, literally, I was supposed to be in Iceland today.
Wow.
But thanks to COVID and shutting down the government, I'm still waiting for a passport. So, and then I was supposed to go to Portugal in a few weeks. But that's all right. And then I actually got to work sometimes too. So,
don't we all?
Yeah. No, you got to go to college.
Well, somehow I got to pay for that.
Oh. Tell your dad to pay for it. Tell him I said so.
But I'm pretty sure you just listed off, you know, every racer's like dream bucket list of races to go to, and you've been to most of those. It's crazy.
I will say one thing that I found in recent years is I kind of like the smaller races. You know, I had talked with the Ray Galicia, you know, Worlds, and you know, they were like, yeah, you know, which would still wouldn't happen, because, you know, until I have a passport, none of that can happen. But I kind of rather, I don't know if I'd rather go, but I like going to like Maine Summer Adventure Race, where I can really, I'm the lead there, so to speak, and not just one of, you know, 10 really good photographers and videographers that are putting all their stuff up. So I guess that means I'm a glory hound. So, so I like a small race with a lot of people. So.
Yeah. And that a lot of people thing is sure fun at races, because when you're at least from a racer's perspective, racing in a small crowd, it's like, well, this is great, but I want to see more people involved. And
yeah, and then, for me, it's, I mean, yeah, you get well, like most of the races last year with, you know, 150, 200, 300, 400 people, you're always shooting something. And then you put out a huge amount of content because I want to make sure everybody has something. So yeah, there, this is really cool waterfall where maybe one picture would suffice, but 50 people went by there. So there's 50 waterfall pictures because each one is that's the one that person wants to see. And there's nothing worse. And it almost happens, not in adventure racing, but like trail runs, mountain biking, that I'll be out there forever and ever and ever. And like, okay, got everybody. And get home and a day later, did you get a picture of number 327? It's like, you're the one I didn't get. almost never somebody get picture of 328 and like, oh yeah, here it goes. So I apologize to people whose picture I don't get, but I try.
Yeah, sure. That can be a downside for your position for large crowds. So I have heard this story from other racers, but I've never heard about it until fairly recently. But do you still carry a Coke with you on the course?
Most Pepsi.
Pepsi.
Yes and no. If, how do I describe it? A lot of times I'm not on, out on course that long anymore. Because when I started doing that, it would be days, you know, you might be out for 12, 18, 20 hours. So I, you know, I'm carrying my full gear, full pack. Anymore, it's like 3 or 4 hours I'm out. You know, if it's someplace where there's a signal, that maybe a little more because I can do some live updates. But it is true that I did. It was Pepsi. And that's Alex Provost. So you people can go back and listen to the episode with Alex Provost, but that was his favorite drink. So
wow.
In some place on YouTube, there's a video clip of him pack rafting on the Dead River at Untamed New England. And it's like, Randy, do you have a Pepsi? And I did. So.
Alex is a fun dude. Haven't seen him.
Alex is a fun dude. Alex brings me maple syrup, so he's one of my favorites.
maybe this might be Alex, who knows, but is there a particular racer that you like or love seeing out on the course, either because, you know, they're always going hard, doing their best, or just because they're out there and having a fun time and just seeing what they can do?
Are you in college? Here's my favorite. That's a good question. Continue on, because I have to think about that for a little bit.
Okay. Where did this, maybe you've answered this previously on a different podcast episode, but where did this podcast exactly come from? Because I'm going to be honest, I haven't listened to all 298 other episodes. so maybe this is answered early on, but where did it come from? And was there an inspiration for it?
Yep. This one I can answer. Yes. Oh, shoot. Now I can't think of there's a bike racer. I can't think of his name. The good pro race Euro race for Garmin. So he's good, but not great. And he did this podcast and it sucked. I mean, the audio was horrible. The music sucked. It was just horrible. And I could not get enough of it because of his guests. And I thought, it can't be that hard. And it doesn't have to be that good. You don't have to be Marc Maron as long as your guests are interesting. And 297 out of 300 podcasts, the guests have been interesting. 100, 200, 300, yeah, maybe. So that's, you know, I thought, okay, this will be fun. Let's do this. And it was hard in the beginning to get people. Well, the first one was easy because Paulette was guest number one. And then if you go through like the first 10 or 20, it's literally all like best friends in adventure racing were the first group. And so there was that. And then somewhere along the line, a bunch of episodes got lost. And I don't even know how many, 30 or 40 or something got lost. So there's like 30 or 40. So this is episode 300, but I think if you look, there's only like 260 or 65 listed, and I don't know where they are. And I don't, you know, if I really spend a lot of time, because I have them all, I have all the episodes on a hard drive, but since I don't know which ones are missing, I don't know which ones I should replace. And every once in a while, I think maybe two or three times, people have said, have you ever done one with so-and-so? And I'm like, well, I think so. And I look, and it's one of the ones missing, so I put it back. So, yeah, so it was just basically, I thought, if you have interesting people, your sound can be okay. And I kind of think my audio is better than some really good podcasts, I think. Usually, when the music comes up, it doesn't blast your eardrums out. I try to equalize it all the way across there.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure the audio quality is, I listened to a couple different podcasts, and I mean, this is pretty good for most of them.
Yeah. Well, the thing is now, even the big ones, the Marins, and I bring him up because he's probably one of the biggest. They've been doing interviews over Zoom, so it's really not much more than this. And Zoom has made it way easier than it used to be, because I used to have to do, first it was Skype calls, and then trying to get more than one person on a Skype chat was hard, and then Messenger was a little easier, but especially now when I do teams, I just, like, Jason, let's get the team on for an episode. Okay. You guys pick a time that works for all four of you. I'll send you a link, and then we're done. And it's so much easier. So, it's like I say, every 12-year-old boy in America has a podcast. So I guess I want one too.
Yeah. So clearly you have a background in racing, pre-photography and podcast. What exactly did that entail?
So I started out as a road bike racer. It was pretty good. And I realized early that endurance was my strength. So the first big race I went to was a 700-mile endurance race in Arizona, and I finished sixth, and the five guys that finished in front of me had all had won the race across America. So okay, and I was really, really close to the fifth place guy, so maybe I'm pretty good at this. So then I went and got a pro license and raced I'd race one or two races a year, but I'd always go to the Nationals, which was the core states back in the days in Philadelphia. And my feeling was at the time, pro road races started out slow. You just meandered for 100 miles, and then it got hard. And I'm like, I can do that. Well, turns out core state was, it was full gallop from the start. But I mean, I'd have fun. I would take a flyer. If I think about it, I'll put a link in the show notes, even though you're the host, that I actually have Phil Liggett commenting on my bike racing. So that was the highlight of my road racing career. Then I did track racing for a while, and then mountain biking, because Paulette and I were living in Sioux Falls, and you know what Sioux Falls is like. Iowa West. And we were doing a bunch of racing in Minnesota and stuff, and we just got tired of the people, so we started mountain biking. And I was pretty good at that. And you'll, so this was the early 90s, late 80s. No, early 90s because we were in Sioux Falls. So you weren't even born yet. So I was reading Bicycling Magazine. You know what a magazine is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. There was like this one paragraph article, 100-mile mountain bike race in Leadville, Colorado. I'm like, well, that sounds like fun. So we did the first Leadville, so we got into mountain biking and living in Sioux Falls. So we did about five or six of those. We did the Vail 100-milers. And I was okay, but I wasn't nothing special. First Leadville, I dropped out of it 75 miles and then sat around and ate a little bit and like, oh, I'm not going to get a ride to town unless I ride. So I put my wristband to that kind of finished. And then we kind of got tired of those. We moved back to the Black Hills and I built a house. And the next year I broke my knee. So I basically had 2 years off of doing anything. And there was a 24-hour race in Breckenridge, somewhere in Colorado. It went down and did that and qualified for Worlds, 24-hour Worlds. So, which is like a month later. So we quick put some stuff together. Shout out to my friend Doyle Neal, gave us some money. So we went to Worlds. So I actually won the Masters World Championships 24-hour mountain biking in 03. But then I also want to say in 04, I went back and I crashed on the first lap and was out. So then I got really tired of riding. Because at that point, I'd been bike racing for 25 years. So that's a long time. So I started trail running. And it was okay, trail runner, up to like 50 miles. Kind of got tired of that. And then somebody in the house that's not me brought a dog home. And I was also starting to do the video and stuff. And I thought, you know what? Let's just take the dog out every night and, you know, hike for 2 or 3 hours and get into this video stuff. And so that's how it happened. And so that's been since 09. I keep thinking someday there's going to be a race. It's like, oh, that'd really be fun to do. I should get into it. And then I'm like, no, that would really be fun to go take pictures. So, and I think part of what helped me when I was starting shooting is, especially when I was doing stuff that where you might be out for 24 hours with a team, you know, walking with a team. Roy Malone one time said, why don't you race? You know, you're pretty strong. I'm like, Roy, you always see me on day three of your day three. You never see me out with you on day one, do you? Oh, well, yeah, that's a good point. So, it's just like, I want to go out with the dog, have a good time. You know, it's still training, quote unquote. And I get to go to raids, races. And where the weather sucks, I'm happy and not bummed out. So at one point I was a pretty good racer, bike racer. I'm not now.
Yeah. Oh. Still pretty sure you could hold your own.
Maybe
like that.
You know, for a few years I could get on a bike and go pretty good because I had a lot of muscle memory, but now I would know my place. I can't even tell you the last time I was on a bike, but you know, it's been a few years at least, you know, and I used to ride 25,000 miles a year. So
Wow.
I guess got my time in. But I also now have, we have a life. I have a life.
So. You got to get one of those sometime.
Yeah, I know. It sucks to grow up. Take your time.
Yeah.
You know, the 6 or 7 years of college should be the best years of your life.
Hope I don't take 6 or 7, but yeah, I tried to get on my bike the other day and start training for a race in 2 weekends, just a short little thing that I'm doing with Eric and Lucas, dad and my brother. And my bike was broken, so I haven't touched that for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks now. But
yeah. Well, you do have other priorities. You seem to have them in order, so with the school thing.
Maybe. So you've been around the racing world since 80s and 90s, you said, and you've seen some very large changes, I guess, over that amount of time. But where do you see adventure racing going in from here?
Oh, do I have to toe the party line, or can I say what I really think?
You're the one that's going to publish this, so yeah, say what you feel like saying.
I've said this before, so I'll start it by saying this. I would like to see adventure racing to the point where the top 5 teams in the country had enough sponsorship to race. They're not going to get paid. It's not going to be a full-time job, but if it could get to the point where those teams were funded so that they didn't have to take their money to pay to go to racing, I think that's where adventure racing can get to. Yeah. Some people, Ian Adamson, thinks it can be in the Olympics. I don't see how. But then again, it was, you know, it wasn't the X Games once, adventure racing, sort of. So that's my, that's what I would like to see. I think that's a reasonable goal. You know, USARA is doing a lot of stuff and a lot of stuff that people don't know about yet and will know about. So it's just a growth, but I think the growth is limited to some extent, but by the same token, I say this all the time, there's 2 or 3 people wanting to join the Teammate Finder page every day. So it's it's slowed down. We got that huge eco challenge bump, obviously, for everything, where we're getting 10 people a day. But it's still growing. You know, the number of races are growing. You know, I suspect that COVID helped in some ways by making this pent up demand for races. People wanted to do anything. So they were like, well, let's try this adventure race thing. So, but the growth is still there. So we'll be interesting to see what the next year or two, how it keeps going. But I'm bullish. I think it's going to grow and stuff. It's maybe not as much as some people think, but yeah, it's going to get to the point where it's going to get to. It's like somebody much smarter than me said about stock car racing. Fast cars go fast, you know. Adventure racers go for adventure. So we just got to get more people wanting to adventure.
Yeah. Now, this was about the time I was really getting into adventure racing, but weren't Team Technu and Team AMK around for a while kind of sponsored like what you're hoping for?
Yeah. So Technu became AMK. So it's basically the same team, different name, but yeah, they were the team. Back in, the first boom in the 90s, early 2000s, it was, a big money sport. You had Nike, you had some internet team, you had Earthlink, I still have an Earthlink email address. I don't think it works anymore. So it was there. It didn't last long. So they were there. Yeah. At that point, they were as close to a full on professional team as we had. So yeah, if you could get five teams at that level, I think that would be really, really cool.
Yeah. And there's definitely the talent out there to have that competitiveness.
It's amazing how many fast people there are. It's like almost any endurance sport. And I'll use Leadville as a start. The first year, which was 91, 92, maybe 93, somewhere in here, there were 100 people that showed up. It was basically, everybody was just trying to finish. Now there's 1500 in there. I mean, it's a race from, the gun. Road cycling's that way. Marathons are that way. Ultra marathons are that way. There's none of this, cruising and, we'll cruise and we'll see what happens and then go hard the last quarter of the race. And I think that's where adventure racing has got to, from what I can tell. It's full gas from moment one. And I think that's a huge difference. But there's also, 10 teams that can go full gas. That's really excited about nationals coming up. The teams that are there, you'd see the team list. I mean, it's everybody. There's not a top team that's not going, obviously. And not that I can't say anything, because if Paula wouldn't say anything on last episode, I can't say, I could actually say something, because this is going to come out after. So I'll say this, the way the course is, it's going to be epic. I might get in trouble for saying something afterwards, even though nobody would know, but it's going to be the fastest, smartest team. How's that? That's pretty generic.
Yeah.
Cause that could be like any race, right? But
and yeah, that's the beauty of adventure racing, is that the game plan is always similar, fastest and smartest, but things are always changing in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, although, as I've been saying, slow is fast. So there may be a little bit of that too.
Yeah. And as adventure racing is kind of starting to get out of this COVID funk that it's gotten into this past year, are there any changes that race directors made to accommodate for this that might stick around as a continuing part of adventure racing?
I think you might see more, might still see some virtual racer meetings beforehand. Probably going to start seeing both. I could see where it would be really good for a race director, like 2 weeks out, to have a virtual meeting and go over everything. And then they're going to go over everything at the race anyway. But people will have a better idea of what to ask. You know, there that it's that thing, especially with newcomers, they don't know what they don't know. So mm-hmm. they don't know the questions to ask. So if they can watch something 2 weeks ahead of time, and something's like, you know, and then it's on there, and then they think, look at it later, and they go, oh, wow, can I bring my own paddle? You know, they don't know that if they don't know they can bring their own paddle, they probably don't have a paddle. But so I can see that. Other than that, not really. I think the new, you know, you're always going to have probably the new norm. I think, you know, if you're inside, people that are not comfortable, you know, wear a mask. You know, that's probably going to go away. Maybe not.
We'll have to see.
I kind of think maybe not, because I don't remember the statistics exactly, but in a normal year, like 200,000 people die from the flu. And last year, 200 people got the flu.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got no problem. You know, anybody, you know, if I go in a crowded place, I wear one. Obviously on planes, because you have to, but maybe the course design will change a little bit, because they're starting to get a lot of first timers. Maybe, or you just have an 8-hour race for them and go. So
yeah.
But so I don't see a lot of changes on the race director side coming up. No.
I believe it was Team Visibility. I could be wrong, but I think it was Team Visibility that had those, you know, kind of virtual races where you'd pay for like the coordinates to go do a race one weekend. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Will that maybe stick around, or will that kind of go out the window as they're planning for other stuff to get back to real racing, I guess you could call it?
I would like to see it stick around. Those guys are really busy. I mean, but they've kind of got it set up that other people can do it. I think Florida's got the do your own adventure races that they've been doing all year. I think they'll probably stick around somewhat, because not everybody can make a race, but you know, if they got it, some people can't go on a weekend. If they can go do it on the, you know, Wednesday afternoon, maybe they're going to do that. You know, we've done some stuff here around the hills with Orienteer, that, you know, Jason and Daniel's website and program, which is kind of fun. Well, you know, you can set it up, you know, online and not even go, you know, go field check it if you don't want, you know, and then people go out and they with their phones and they get close and it pings and you know. So things like that, I think, are a good feeder system. So some of that virtual stuff. The problem is the people that want to put the virtual stuff on want to go racing. You know, a year ago, everybody had time to do it.
Because
we're racing. So, you know, it's the race director's dilemma. They don't ever get to race.
Yeah. Are there any races that are coming up that you are excited to see? I mean, obviously everyone's waiting on Nationals, but that'll be out by the time this is out.
Yeah. I guess... Yes. But I've got races on the calendar for next year already. So go to Nationals. So I go to Wisconsin for Nationals, and then 4 or 5 weeks later, I'm going back to Nationals for a sports car race. Or going back to Wisconsin for a sports car race. So I'm looking forward to that, because that's something different. I don't think I'm going to Baja this year unless I do something different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long trip for me because I got to drive from here to Denver and then Denver to Mexico. And this year they race all the way down to the end of Baja. So then you race all the way down there. Then you got to drive all the way home. So that's going to Castlewood, which seems funny. I'm going, go to St. Louis to shoot an 8-hour race, but it's really, really fun. And Emily and Earl put that on and they've moved. So it's their last one. Then next year there's already C2C Oregon, a couple others that I can't talk about yet, which is always fun. I am bummed. By the time this comes out, Abby will know I'm not going to be able to go to Rootstock's race. They literally pick the one week of the year that I have to stay home and shoot a local race. Right. Cause I shoot the Black Hills 100 trail run and it's a 2-day race. And it's just like, I've done it for 5 years. They're friends of mine. Sorry, Abby. Sorry, Brent. But, and then there's, if I go back to Maine next year, that'd be really cool. Jason's like, as soon as I announce the dates for Oregon, he was going to make sure you get a plane ticket because last year it didn't work out for me to be able to go. As I put it, it was not working out to go because I had to meet with some customers, which ended up being getting me basically 2 years worth of work. So not that I want to work that much. I want to quit working, but I can't quite yet. So. So yeah, there's those who knows where Nationals is going to be next year. I haven't heard anything. I don't think anybody has. So, obviously C2C, that's, as much as I like South Dakota and it's not a bad place, going to Florida for a week in February is not a bad deal. So there's all those. I'm actually going to try and do some more sports car stuff next year. The week after Nationals, I'm shooting monster trucks.
Wow.
So, but that's local, so that's kind of fun.
That's still fun. Yeah.
I'm hoping I get to do go to Iceland for the 6-day race again next year. That was such an easy. So that's a 6-day, the racers have to carry all their gear for 6 days, except a tent and water. So they have to carry all their food, clothing, sleeping. And it's just, and this terrain is spectacular. And I thought I wouldn't miss it because I knew I wouldn't be able to go. And then I'm looking at the pictures and it's like, oh, God, I want to be there. So, and then, it'd be nice to get something more on the West Coast other than Expedition Oregon. It'd be fun to go to some of those other places if they don't all burn down.
Yeah. I think it'd be great to get something a little bit bigger here in the Midwest, but nobody's putting anything on.
I've heard some chatter about Arkansas, which would be a cool spot. So that wouldn't be too bad for you. So I'm knock wood, everything stays the new normal or whatever it's going to be. And we get to do all that stuff. So, hell, I might even go to Canada next year.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I hope we do.
Yeah. So for anybody that doesn't know, which is probably everybody but about six people, that you guys have teamed up with. You needed a good woman, so you got my wife to be on your team, and then you moved it to next year, which will be good. I think she'll be ready. I think she'll be ready next year, and then because she's already planned 2 years out, so she's going back to run the Pyrenees in 2 years. Yeah, 2 years from now. What's that? 20? I don't know. Anyway, 2 years from now, I'll go back to run across the Pyrenees. she's looking forward to that. But yeah, so bring them on. Let's have some adventure.
Yeah, I just hope I'm ready for Canada. I'm sure she'll hold her own, but I might not be
you've
ready.
You've got like a, you've got like a year. You should be.
Yeah. So back to this racer. Is there any a favorite racer that you have?
How about? No.
No? Okay.
How about, I've got, I mean, there's so many, but how about a couple of nominees?
Sure.
But how about, ask me the question, do I have a favorite adventure racing person?
Yeah, yeah. Do you, you have a favorite person involved with adventure racing in any way?
Yes, two, and they're tied. Chris Radcliffe and Anne-Marie Dunhill. So, Anne-Marie and I have had some adventures, particularly in Portugal, Ecuador, Costa Rica. And I just really close friends. This had a good, we actually really had a good shit going in Portugal where we were doing live updates every day because I'm an idiot and she's really smart. So that always works out good. Chris and I,
it's a fun combination.
So Chris, yeah. Chris and I met at the first Cowboy Tough. I'd driven over there and Mark Harris is like, hey, we got this guy. He flew in, got no rental car. Can he ride with you? And I'm like, do I want to be with this guy for 5 days? Like, you know, I sort of know what I'm doing. And Chris and I bonded over several things that we really hate about people within 5 minutes. So, yeah, Chris, I probably everybody, most everybody listening knows Chris's photographs, and I'm gonna get him back to a race next year. That's he's a, you know, a small business owner, so you can imagine what the last year or two has been like for him. But so there,
sure.
I racer. You know what? I'm just gonna go ahead and say Kyle Peter has always been so cool. Which it may be part of that is I'm like, well, maybe if Kyle thinks that I think he's cool, he'll come back to racing. But so, yeah, he's the one. And then I also got to give a shout to Nathan because Nathan is just the most understated. If you don't know him, you don't know him, but he is such a funny person. So this is one of my favorite adventure race stories and it involves Nathan. We're in Ecuador and they're finishing up a paddle down a river. And my driver, you know, we had a bus with 3 or 4 people and kind of split up for the day. So he takes me to this little village where they're going to go by, finds me a guy in a boat, speaks no English, take me up river. So we go up river about a half hour. We come around the corner. Here comes Seagate, paddle along. And Nathan's just like, hey, Randy, how you doing? Like he knew I was coming around the corner or something. So, yeah, he's pretty cool. But hey, there's so many that you have moments with on the course. Sometimes it's just because they want, you know, they're tired of their teammates. I once trekked with a team in South America. There was, I guess this was probably in Costa Rica. And there was an American gal on the team. And I just walked with them for like 3 hours. And then I'd have to turn around and walk back 3 hours. She hadn't been able to talk. She hadn't been able to talk English for like 4 days. She's got one teammate that can speak English, you know, way better than my Spanish, but she said it's just been so hard with nobody to talk to. So, it's moments like that with racers that are really, you know, not even necessarily, they're not going to be on camera or picture or video, but those are some of the memories that I really, you get to see those people at those moments where they're really, really, you see the person, which is really, really cool. And it's a privilege for me because it's mostly racers that get to see racers like that. The TA people don't, volunteers don't usually get to see that because they don't just get to go and hang out on course like I do, which is a real, it's probably why I like it so much, because I get to be out there with them. And sometimes I get to be out there with nobody because all them stupid adventure racers don't know the right route to the checkpoint. They're going the wrong way, not where I am. So,
yeah, the moments out with the group in the adventure part of the adventure race always make for the best memories.
Yeah, you know, like for me, because everybody's seen this with Eco Challenge, I think the coolest part of that whole race is when everybody started. You know, there were 50 people or whatever following Alex Mann because they were all lost and he was able to get them out of there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was probably my favorite part because it's kind of what it's all about. Yeah, being out there with those people and having a relatively good time.
Yeah. Well, this has been a fun time. Thank you for having me. I believe we've kind of reached our allotted time limit. So thank you for this wonderful opportunity. Thank you to everyone for listening to this.
Well, it was good. Okay. Yes. So now we're done with your part. So now I'm going to host a little bit.
Oh.
So. So what are you studying?
I'm going to Iowa State University for music education with an emphasis in composition.
Yeah, you damn musicians. So I need to send you a couple of podcasts you might like. Cause I listen to music podcasts. I sort of know what a triad is now. And a descending fifth. I'll put them in the show notes. There's one called Settling the Score where they talk about movie scores, which is really, really cool. And what's the other one? Strong Songs. The guy takes a song, usually pop songs, and breaks them down into all the sections and what they're doing here and how this guitar is doubling a fifth down and this is doing this. And it's, I don't understand it, but I love it. So, so what instruments do you play?
I started out on piano. I started learning that in second grade. And then I switched to playing French horn in fifth grade when band started at my school. Since then, I have learned trumpet for jazz band. Mellophone is what I play for marching band, which is the marching version of a French horn. I also play flugelhorn, which is a mellower sounding trumpet. And I've also learned organ.
Yeah. I hate you people. So you had band practice tonight, you said, because you wanted to be a little late. So I'm guessing you weren't working on Stairway to Heaven. Not that kind of band.
No, not quite. Let's see. our first game is this coming weekend, which will be passed by the time this episode probably comes out. But it's against University of Northern Iowa, and we're playing Watermelon Sugar by Harry Styles as kind of the big piece there.
So yeah, that's all right. So so you're at Iowa State?
Yes. So now people on the podcast can see this, but I'm wearing an Iowa State shirt.
Of course you are. So, and that's in, where are you at? In
Iowa State is Ames, Iowa.
Ames, Iowa. So Iowa State, what's the other one?
University of Northern Iowa.
Right.
And there's also Iowa State, University of Iowa.
University, that's where?
Northern Iowa is Cedar Rapids, I believe.
So where was the last where was the last NARS race at?
Oh, kind of. My dad went to it, but I did not. I believe last NARS race was over. Yeah. Last NARS race was in Cedar Rapids.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. He just spoke through the door. Iowa City.
Iowa City. Okay. So
my bad.
So I have a story about the stadium there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so they were doing a prologue through town, you know, for those that aren't up on their recent history, North American Adventure Race series. So they're ready. And one of the things they had to do in the prologue was like, there's like a ring of honor in the stadium, and they had to get somebody's jersey number. You know, look through the fence. So it's cool. Oh, this would be cool. I'll get a drone shot of this. So I'm flying and I'm up above it because, you know, it's an 80,000 foot or 80,000 seat stadium. And here's like three adventure racers running by. And I look up and I'm surrounded by seven cops. Like, that's on the University of Iowa property and you can't fly a drone.
Ooh.
So I said, I am very sorry. I'm bringing it in right now, and I apologized a bunch of times. And they were like, don't do it again. So I didn't. music composition. What do you, you probably hate this question, but what do you do when you're with music composition? Write music, teach music, play music.
That's why I'm the also music education major, so I can teach music. But as far as composition goes, generally what some composers do is they will teach at a university as well as writing music on the side. That way they get the job that will pay the bills and the job that they like to do. But some will make it as a full-time composer. Some start their own publishing companies. And others, like you previously mentioned, do movie scores. And that's kind of what I'd want to get into, Hollywood, doing movies or TV shows. That's what I like.
Yeah. All right. So I got to ask you this. Do you got a piece of music we can put in this episode?
Yeah, I've probably got some stuff I'll send you.
But yeah, pick something out, send me the file, and we'll put that in for the music.
So, okay.
Because it's not a podcast without music.
That's true.
And I actually stole that from the original guy I played or I listened to that gave me the idea. God, I wish I could remember his name. So, Climber, skinny little Climber dude. Anyway, yeah, so we'll feature your music because that'd be cool when you say, we knew him when. Yeah. All right. Did you come up with a catchphrase to close the podcast out with?
No, I didn't think that was part of the assignment.
Yeah, I didn't give it to you, so we'll just do slow is fast, fast is good. Be safe. Thanks for listening. All that good stuff. So, and then we get to do the awkward goodbyes on Zoom. So.
Yes,
but. It took forever, but hey, I got to talk for once, so nobody will download this one once they see. But I appreciate, putting up with having to wait. Hope it was worth it.
It was a great time.
Cool. So, you got homework tonight?
I do, actually. I have homework for marching band, believe it or not. Yeah.
Okay. I got to know, what's homework for marching band?
We have to record ourselves playing the songs memorized. Having heard from the other people in my section, they have spent 4 nights until 2 a.m. so far. I got one song.
How do they know? How do they know if you have it memorized or not? Do you have to put yourself on video? You have to
show the whole room. Yeah. Do it on video. Show the whole room.
That's really cool, I guess. All right. Young man, do your homework.
Okay.
All right. That was good fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.